Transformation is inevitable, but it doesn't have to take forever. What if you could see the obstacles before they happen, sidestep the common mistakes, and drive change faster than ever? That's exactly what we're here to do. Welcome to Transformation Unfiltered, the podcast where HR professionals share their stories about how they've hit fast forward on their transformation efforts and built legacies as world-class people leaders and change makers. And now, here's the show.
I think that is part of the give back. Always volunteer. I judge for the State Science Fair regularly with our foundation. I'm on the VPM Science Matters board to help figure out what's going on with science in the state. Always give back, because especially women in science, there's not enough of us. And the best way to do that is to mentor someone younger if you can. So always give back. And then don't give up. It's a battle for sure. And science is hard. You can spend a whole year working on something and then find out this doesn't work. And you're back at square one. Don't give up.
Karan Trumbo grew up learning how to survive in an unpredictable household. And she came up with an unexpected strength, the ability to meet people where they are without losing herself. Now, as a leader, she brings that same emotional intelligence to every conversation, acknowledging the weight of other struggles while staying steady in her own. Karan Trumbo is the Vice President of Operations at Virginia Bio, where she oversees strategic planning, operations, and communications to support the growth of our state's biotech industry. With a strong background in life sciences and deep knowledge of the biotech landscape, she has been instrumental in advancing Virginia Bio's mission. Beyond her professional role, Karan is active in the Junior League of Richmond, promoting volunteerism and community improvement. She lives in Richmond, Virginia, with her husband and three young boys. Welcome, Karan. We're just gonna get right into it. So tell me a little bit about that time in your career where you had this moment of, OMG, I just really screwed up.
Thanks, Alexa. That moment came actually at a very young age. I was a genetics researcher at Texas A&M, where I went to school. And I was doing research, which a lot of us geneticists do. And I was in the lab by myself. I was having to do something called sterile technique to get everything cleaned and have completely sterile before I went to use it in the way that I needed to use it. To get to you guys in a setting, I'm in a lab bench and I have a little container of ethyl alcohol that is worse than any kind of alcohol you've ever had. It's so strong. And I have a Bunsen burner with a flame going so that I can use a pair of tweezers to grab the equipment that I need to clean, dip it in the ethyl alcohol, then put it over top of the Bunsen burner that is flaming. And it's all completely normal. You're supposed to set it on fire, but the fire dies off after the ethyl alcohol burns off and you know you have it clean. So I'm in the lab. I'm doing that. I'm probably on my last piece of equipment to do that with. And I drop it into the thing of ethyl alcohol completely on fire. So what happens is I've now put flame to alcohol and it is burning. And I have one of those real freak out moments where I stand there for a second and I'm like, I don't even know what to do. Then I see a fire and I'm like, I'm going to get the fire extinguisher. So I run to the fire extinguisher, realizing I'm not even sure I know how to work said fire extinguisher. And as I'm standing there with the extinguisher in my hand, I realize, wait, these lab benches are flame retardant. That flame is going to be putting itself out. So I just need to stop what I'm doing and let it do its thing and make sure I've removed any other ethyl alcohol that is now sitting on the bench. And sure enough, after a couple of minutes, it burnt off and my heart rate came a little bit down because I was very jazzed at that moment. And no one wants to set a fire, especially in their work environment. I truly set a fire and learned a lot from that mistake that you will never make again.
Oh my gosh, I can't wait to dig into this a little bit more. I'm going to ask you to rewind a little bit because first of all, I'm super impressed that you grabbed the fire extinguisher. All the firefighters that ever listen to this podcast are like, all right, thank you very much. Let's rewind to before that really smart moment you had. And we've all had those moments. Tell me a little bit about what it was like to just really slow down and what were you feeling in your body? What did that look like? What if I was watching you on a Netflix episode, what would I be seeing?
I probably looked like the emoji of the brain exploding because I, at that moment, was having so many thoughts, but most of them were freak out. We've all been in work environments where that smoke detector goes off or smoke alarm goes off and you have to leave and it's because somebody burnt popcorn. This was going to be one of those situations where I actually set a fire, a real fire in a lab, and I am going to be the reason why everyone is leaving the School of Medicine. Yes, like full worst case scenario immediately happened. And then that other part of your brain starts clicking in. And for me, it did click in to be like, all right, I need a solution, which was the fire extinguisher. But once I got to the fire extinguisher, I was able to step back again and use a different part of my brain and be like, wait, I know more. I don't actually need to do this thing. I actually just need to wait it out. So that's what I did. But I full spectrum that moment.
That's amazing. I think that you did go full spectrum. And when you think about the things that we're imagining, let's just go back to the devil on the shoulder, and then we'll go to the one that's, oh, it's okay. We have some think clearly. What were some of the thoughts? I heard you say, I'm going to be the reason everyone's walking out of the school due to the thing. What were some of the other thoughts? Because I think some of our listeners might have had these thoughts before, even if they didn't set a lab on fire.
One, I'm going to get fired. I am doing a job, and this is not part of the job description.
Fire is,
but also, yes, I saw one of those things that's, wait, this job actually set me up for success. Like, I am in a situation where this is made so that if this happens, it's not a catastrophic event. So I need to have faith that I am in the right place with the right people doing the right things. And if I do that, then it's not going to be this catastrophic event that I have built up in my brain, which is a fun thing to realize as a young. I was in my early 20s when this happened, a really early life lesson.
Absolutely. And you know what really strikes me as I keep telling you back into the yuck, I'm just doing it as the podcast person. What I'm noticing is that your conversation, your internal dialogue between you're going to get fired and that wait happened really quickly. And I think that is pretty unusual based on some of the coaching I do. So tell me more about what do you think led you to be able to have that happen fast instead of sitting there in panic mode? Do you have any kind of thoughts about that?
So I am one of those people that grew up in a house that wasn't traditional by any means. So my parents never got married, but stayed together for 30 some years. But my father was an alcoholic and my mom worked full time as a nurse and was dealing with all of that. So I feel like as a kid, I very quickly learned different paths I could take as far as how I reacted to problems, because I saw lots of different reactions in my life, some good, some bad. But I learned from those reactions. And I also learned most problems that we come up in our head are not life and death. As you see really big problems as a small child, you're like, actually, is this thing that I'm stressing out over right now that big of a problem? And a fire is a big problem. So it did at that moment seem like a big problem. But once I realized, hey, wait, this isn't a life and death situation. This situation's going to put itself out. I was much more able to go back to that don't freak out moment. You've been through worse kind of situation. So I think growing up in a household where things aren't necessarily traditional and you have real life problems, it helps you decide which problems are big and which problems are not big.
Oh my gosh. I really am grateful for you sharing that. One, that's a pretty big thing to live through. And not to diminish any of those, I think that you were in training mode for this fire for a long time.
I was the oldest of, or am the oldest of three kids in 3 years. So my sweet siblings did a really good job with making sure that I was used to putting out fires throughout our life.
Isn't it funny how life sometimes shines right back in your face and shows you, hey, you're actually really good at this thing. And I think by your dishing it to us, we understand that you've been training for that for a long time.
Yes, yeah. Very much.
Tell me a little bit more about as you learned to, from a long track record of navigating kind of other kinds of fires that might have been even bigger than this or more dire, or helped you put it in perspective. There were a couple of lessons that even came out as you reflected on that. Mm-hmm. I'm curious about how you would really categorize some of the things that were the silver linings of this fire, but maybe even that history of learning as you go and then applying it in your career.
So I eventually became a lab manager, the person that had to deal with me after I set stuff on fire. And I think I was able to do a much better job of managing undergrads in a lab because I had this experience. I could truly look at those kids, young adults, and be like, you're going to make a mistake and it's okay. Learn from it. Don't do it again and you'll be fine. It also helped me to not be so critical on them when they did make a mistake, because I think I mentioned it before when we were talking. I also ran a gel backwards, which is something that anyone who's ever done science before understands. You have this thing and you worked really hard to get your solution to put in it, and then you accidentally set it in the machine wrong and you lose everything you've been working on for weeks. And those are things that you just learn in the lab. And I was fortunate enough to learn it at an early age. So I was able to be a much more empathetic lab manager when I started working with students. I also think it helps me a lot now in my current position where I'm VP of operations at Virginia Bio. And in that role, I'm working with a ton of different people. I am working with CEOs. I am working with grad students. I am working with scientists that have been working in a lab for a while. Insurance providers, everything you can think of, I'm working with them. I realize what they think are big issues to them, and I need to take that seriously because I've seen both sides of the coin on this. And I can also really be sympathetic towards people when they're coming to me and they need help with
it. It's amazing. I think that when I hear you reflect on how you experienced this, it pivoted you to be a better leader. In terms of saying, hey, we're all gonna screw up sometimes. Sometimes the screw ups that seem giant might not be as big as they feel in the moment, but I'm gonna honor you, how you're feeling about this. So I think that's one thing. And then you also, it sounded like, got a little bit more, you softened a little bit, maybe towards yourself, because you realized, oh, I really made a big mistake. I threw away a whole week's worth of lab work by making one move. And that helped you to think about the students that were there and the fact that you're learning. And now you've pivoted that to Virginia Bio, where you are today, where you're working with not students, but CEOs. You're working with not students, but established scientists that have big, giant problems that are facing them. And they probably seem giant in the moment. One of the things you just said was, I'm not going to diminish how they think, how big their problem is. You honor that with empathy. Tell me a little bit more about how empathy and your role as a science leader come together.
We all hold ourselves to different standards. I am clearly an OCD type A person based on the way I grew up, and that's just okay. I did good stuff with it. I could have done bad stuff, and I went a good way with it. I have managed to find jobs in my life that had help me use that OCD and type A personality better the company as opposed to hurt it in any way. And because of that, I can get a lot done in a day, a whole lot. But I recognize not everyone works that way. Some people need to process things more, need to give a little more time. And so I have to be patient and understanding and not hold people to the same standards that I hold myself to. And that's been really good. I clearly want them to get their job done, but I don't get angry or frustrated if they are unable to do as many things in a day as I can do. Even my best friend group here is, don't ever compare yourself to Karan. And they mean it not in a mean way, but it's like, I just have a lot of energy and I do a lot of things. And so in my work life, I use it for good. I am able to do a lot. We are a very small organization. So I'm a jack of all trades and have learned a lot of new skills that I did not get from the lab. But it helps me when I talk to scientists because I'm like, hey, I know you think that this is the only thing you can do, but these skills are actually very transferable to X if you're ever interested. And that's one of the things, scientists especially, you feel like you have this degree and you have to stick in research because that's your only option. And part of my literal job is to let you know there are other options with that degree. So a lot of that learning and empathy comes in the form of just trying to help them know what's out there while also recognizing what I think might be a super easy task may not be a super easy task to someone else.
Are you enjoying the conversation? There are more game-changing insights still ahead. If you're passionate about driving transformation and want to stay ahead of the curve, join our Accelerated Transformation community. Send us a quick message on LinkedIn or by email, and we'll send you an invite. Now, let's get back to the show.
There's some connection between what you just described and the thing we started out with, your lesson. What you're talking to me about a little bit is seeing broadly and not seeing the pigeonhole. I'm in fear response. I can only see what's right in front of me. You did that in the moment in the lab, and then you help other people to do that in how they view themselves and their situation, maybe their problem, maybe their opportunities. So can you tell me a little bit more about how you cultivate that open, eyes open kind of thing as you move forward into your career and help others, in addition to what you do to help the scientists you just mentioned?
I think a lot of it is just talking to people. So, you know, I teased with Virginia Bio when I first started working here. I thought I always going to work with a scientist because that's what we are, or biotechnology association. And I learned quickly, no one can do it by themselves. So my scientist needs a business partner, and that business partner needs funding. And then once you have the funding, you need a place for your lab. So you need a construction or a leasing company. Before all of that, you need your lawyer so you have your IP protected. There are just so many people involved in every single process of being a scientist, especially one that's trying to start a company. And I learned, always say yes. So, you know, you never know what's going to happen. I took this job literally having no clue what an association was, and very quickly had to learn. But if I'd said no, I would have never learned any of these things or seen all the growth that's happening here in Virginia now.
Yeah. And saying yes means being open. I think you really have demonstrated that you can keep your eyes wide open in an emergency and in a steady state. And I think as you think about how you have used that to pivot from being a bench scientist to a lab leader to someone who helps businesses in science start up and grow and be interdependent in the system, tell me a little bit about how that earliest experience helped to speed you in this direction.
So I started with Virginia Bio in January of 2016. Mm-hmm. And for those that don't know, the Virginia General Assembly also begins in January. And trade association means we are actually a lobbying organization for our industry. So General Assembly session at the state level here in Virginia,
it's like
is
the
very
Super Bowl,
important.
Basically.
It is like the Super Bowl. It's what we train all year for. I started, I think, 2 days before the Virginia General Assembly started. And my CEO at the time handed me a stack of Bioscience Caucus invites and told me to deliver them to the GAB. And I literally looked at him and I was like, Jeff, I don't know anything you just said.
Another head exploding moment.
I know you just use English words, but I do not understand them. And it was humbling, but also I need to ask because this is now my job and I don't know anything about this. So I had to have a bit of a tutorial on government relations and the General Assembly building and what even a Bioscience Caucus invite was. And asking the questions really helped set me up for success. 9 years later, I helped lead a government affairs committee for our membership. And I'm very familiar with everything happening at the state level in the bioscience industry. But it was humbling to come into a situation and literally not even understand what was being asked of me.
Yeah. And I think that one of the things you said earlier was I learned to give students grace and create a place where it was okay not to know it all. And then look where you got thrown into, that lovely situation, or you maybe stepped into it willingly. Yeah. So as you think about your ability to not know all the answers and be open, how do you think that accelerated you from 2016 to now?
Oh, man, I think I'm always eager to learn. Not knowing everything is okay. And I, as you mentioned, I do know that and I recognize that in other people. But it doesn't mean that you can't take the time to learn it. So I have spent a lot of time learning about things I did not know. I went from knowing, when I did research, I knew a whole lot about one very specific gene.
More narrow.
Yes. And now I'm in this industry where I know a little bit about a whole lot. So it's been really just cool to learn all of that. While also recognizing, you know, I have, again, honed some new skills that I am very good at that I didn't even know were there. And a lot of those actually started in the lab. I just did not realize how transferable those skills were until I was put in a situation to use them in a different way.
That's amazing. And I think it's interesting what you just said about you knew a lot about a very deep kind of topic with that one gene. And now you're a lot about a lot of things. So going from deep to broad. In this industry where you are advocating for science startups in Virginia, I bet you come across a lot of experts. Is that right?
Yes.
So I'm going to back up. How does that feel to you to be a jack of all trades, but maybe not a deep understanding of one thing among those experts? How do you engage with them?
Scientists in particular are not known for necessarily being the most social, but when you get them talking about that thing they're really into, it is so fun because the passion that comes from focusing on something like that is so strong. I'm okay with the difference now. I just really like to hear them to talk about the thing that they are passionate about. And now it feels me more to hear them getting passionate than it does previously how I used to be when it came to talking about BCR-ABLE. It's really just been fun to learn from them and learn to appreciate that they are dedicating so much time to this thing. That at the end of the day, they're trying to help somebody. Everything they're doing is trying to help somebody. It's coming from the best place possible.
I love that. And I think if I was visualizing you talking to someone, you're not worried about talking about everything. You're inviting them to share everything they know, and that feeds your desire to learn. So it's a really nice fit. Okay. So tell me, you've learned a lot about along the way and you apply it really quickly. It's your unicorn superpower. But what would you say to somebody that's just starting out, maybe 15 years ago, to someone in your student lab? Knowing what you know today, how could you give them advice? Or what advice would you give them?
Don't be afraid to ask the questions. Clearly, it's the only way to learn, especially when you're in a lab where, and not asking the question can also set you up for failure. Pretty big. So that's the first one. Secondly, I would say, don't be afraid to make a mistake, but learn from it. That mistake only matters if you actually learn something from it, I feel like. It's only good if you learn from it. And then thirdly, don't say no. All of us are, especially I think statistically speaking, women are most likely to not apply for a position if they don't meet all of the needs or qualifications. And it's, don't say no to that. You say yes to half of this. So just go for it. You never know what's going to happen. And you never actually know what someone's looking for. So just say yes. You never know what comes from it in any way.
Oh, gosh. So that goes back to your just say yes and ask a lot of questions. And you don't have to have all the answers to the questions to be good enough to apply for something that you think you might.
No.
Oh, my gosh. That's really cool. When you think about them, then, okay, they have applied for this position. How could some of this stuff that you have learned along the way help them in leading other people?
I think that is part of the give back. Always volunteer. I judge for the State Science Fair regularly with our foundation. I'm on the VPM Science Matters board to help figure out what's going on in science in the state. I always give back because especially women in science, there's not enough of us. And the best way to do that is to mentor someone younger if you can. So always give back. And then don't give up. It's a battle for sure. And science is hard. You can spend a whole year working on something and then find out this doesn't work. And you're back at square one. Don't give up. It's very easy to think about it at times. Also, we're in a different research environment right now, and that's ever changing, hopefully. If you're still passionate about a project, don't give up on it. There are ways to still do it.
I love that. You know, what is really something I wonder is when you feel deflated, like you just lost a whole week's worth of effort, or maybe someone has been working on a project for years and funding gets canceled. How do you persevere?
I think you'd need to take some time and have that break. Give yourself the time to mourn what you thought was going to happen. And then once you've gotten to a place where you feel like you're ready to go, just look. I tease, I'm like, sometimes it's just the way you frame it. Your research project might have been intended for X, but now maybe you want to cater it towards something in defense because the DOD has lots of funding. And if you can do that and pivot the way you phrase it, then you can still work on this project. It might not be the original route you had intended, but there's still a way. I feel like especially in science, we saw a lot of that during COVID. a lot of our companies figured out a way to pivot what they were working on to help in the time of COVID. And the companies that thought long-term with that are doing great now. Like COVID did not hurt them. It's giving yourself the grace to take a minute because you got to mourn the bad, but then just figuring out how to make it work, get a little more creative.
Yeah. Being open to the possibilities. Yeah. And like you said, don't say no. Find ways to help other people say yes to you too.
Yeah.
Well, Karan, it has been such a joy. And thank you for your authenticity and sharing so much about your journey. It really was a gift to a lot of people. Tell me, where can people find you if they're looking for you?
LinkedIn is probably the best resource. Karan Trumbo on LinkedIn. I'm with Virginia Bio, so you'll be able to find me, or you can find me on the Virginia Bio website as well. But LinkedIn is usually the easiest way to get in touch with me.
And if you're in the Virginia Bio corridor at any event, you'll probably see Karan.
Especially in the month of May. We're going to have a busy month together.
Thank you for making us time for us. So I just want to share some of the key takeaways that I think there are so many treasures in this conversation. Always give yourself a little grace. There's going to be that first devil on your shoulder that's, oh, that was a real screw up. You're going to get fired. And if you can train yourself to be open earlier and give yourself some grace, it will open the door to all kinds of things. Another thing that you shared was having a little empathy, not only for yourself, but for others, has really gone a long way. You gave empathy to yourself in the beginning, but then you helped your students to know it's okay. I get it. We're not all perfect. And then being ready to just say yes. And when things don't go your way or the way you wish they would have gone, be open to new possibilities. Mourn the bad, brush yourself off, and think, how can I say yes to this still if it's really important to me? I think there was so much here, and I can't wait to hear what other nuggets of goodness people are gathering from you. Thanks for listening. If you like what you heard, tune into the next Transformation Unfiltered episode, where we'll have other guests at just maybe not just like Karan because she was so awesome, but with their own unique perspectives that will help us accelerate our careers because they're willing to put their stuff out there for us and dish it. We look forward to sharing more with you on the upcoming episodes of Transformation Unfiltered. Thanks again, Karan.
Thank you for hanging out with us and listening to Transformation Unfiltered. If you've found today's conversation valuable, leave us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast player. It helps us reach more changemakers just like you. Do you know someone who would be great as a guest on our show? Send us a message on LinkedIn or drop us an email. We'd love to hear your recommendation and appreciate the connection. See you next week for another episode featuring an HR leader just like you who's hitting fast forward on change, impact, and transformation.